we're holding on Tzaddik Omud Aleph, the seventh line. We've been learning about the whole thing of selling Nichsa Malug and Takonas Usha, whether the husband has the ability to block that sale. We've been dealing with that for a blot and a half now. The last thing we pointed out was that we had two braises, regarding the din of Shein v'Ayin. We know the Torah says that if a person knocks out his Eved Kanani's eye or tooth or any one of a bunch of other Roshei Evodim, then the Eved goes free. The question is, what happens if you have Avodim that are Nichsa Malug? So that Nichsa Malug, then the goof of the Eved belongs to the wife. The Peiros of the Eved, meaning, for example, the work that the Eved does, belongs to the husband. Which one of them, if he injures the Eved, is the Eved going to go free? We had one Braisa saying only if the wife injures him, and the other one says neither one. So we discussed why those Braisas would be disagreeing. One possibility was about the matter of Takonas Usha, and then the Gemara went into a few other possibilities, in what ways the Braisas would be arguing, one of them being that they're arguing on the point that we talked about the other day, Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf. Do we say that the husband who owns the Peres of this Eved is considered as though he has an ownership of the Guf of the Eved, or would we say that no, the wife has the exclusive ownership of the guf, and therefore, as far as we're concerned, she's basically the only owner of the Eved. And in that case, then the first Braisa would take that view. Therefore, it says that if she injures the Eved, he goes free. Whereas the second Braisa would be taking the view that neither one is really considered the full owner of the Eved. They're, in effect, they're sort of considered partners, and therefore, that neither one has the ability by himself injuring the Eved to cause the Eved to go free. So now the Gemara says, if we understand the Machlokas that way, or plug the Dahani Tanoi, then we can say that the Machlokas of those two Braises is the same as the following Machlokas Tanoim on another matter involving Avodim. Now we have like this: the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that if a person hits his Eved Knani bashevet with a stick, then that, so we're talking about, in other words, and the Rambam stresses, we're not talking about, for example, so like this: if a person hits his Eved, then if the Eved dies, he's Chayev Misa. It's an Eved Knani, but nevertheless, an Eved Knani is Yeshne B'mitzvahs Mitzvahs. He's certain mitzvahs are applicable to him, as we learned the other day, and therefore he's considered to that extent like a regular yid, in the sense that if his master kills him, or anybody else for that matter, then he's Chayev Misa. However, the Torah carves out an exception for that and says, "Ach im yom o yomayim yamod." If the Eved survives for a day or two after the beating, then lo yukam. Then we don't punish the master ki chatzpoi hu, because the Eved is his kesef. In other words, to a certain extent, after all, a master has the right to hit his Eved. But Rambam, by the way, when he brings this halacha, stresses that that's why the pasuk says that he hits him bashevet, meaning with a stick, the normal kind of thing that a master might hit an eved with. He says no, for example, if the master took a sword, let's say, and struck the eved with it, then there's no yoyim or yomayim, then he's chayiv misa, even if the eved died only a long time after that. Anyway, the point is, there is this concept called Yoim HaYomayim, that the master of the Eved himself, Yoim HaYomayim, by the way, means a day or two. Rashi explains on the Pasuk, based on the Gemara, that what it means is the Eved has to survive for at least 24 hours. Yoim means a day, Yomayim means, in other words, that it's 24 hours, where part of it is on one day and part on the next day. Anyway, the point is, the Torah is saying that exemption, that if a person hits his Eved in a way where a master would normally hit his Eved, and the Eved falls ill, but then he survives for at least 24 hours, then the master is potter from Misa. But if he had died within 24 hours, then the master would be Chayiv Misa for it. So now we're going to talk about that din of Yoim HaYomayim, the same way as when it comes to Shein V'Ayin. We have to distinguish between the master versus anybody else. The same way here, we also have to consider who is the Eved master. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, HaMoicher Avdei La'acher. If somebody sells his Eved to somebody else, or Posik Imay Amanashi Shamshenu Shloshim Yoim, he makes a deal that I'm selling you this Eved, however, I'm going to still continue having him work for me for another 30 days. So 30 days from now, the Eved will be there. The Eved will start working for you. Right now, he's your asset in the sense that you could resell him or you could whatever. But for the next 30 days, I'm reserving for myself his work. What happens during those 30 days if one or the other of them beats him? So the mayor says the first master is the one who's going to have the special exemption of because the Eved is still working for him. Therefore, the Gemara interjects, evidently then, the mayor is one who holds that Kinyan Peres is Kikinyan Aguf. Therefore, the master owns the Peres at this point because the Eved is working for him and that's the Peres of the Eved. So he's the one who gets the Yoyma Yemayim exception, but the second one would not, because the second one doesn't, the second one is not actually having him work for him yet. Now Tosfos points out that before, when we had the matter of freeing the Eved by Shane and Ayin, that was different, because there, what we can say is, we said neither one is able to free him, because the wife has the Kinyan Aguf, and the husband doesn't have the ability, so his Kinyan Peres blocks the ability to, because he has Kinyan Peres, and a mayor holds Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, therefore that prevents the freeing of the Eved for Shane Va'ayin, and vice versa. The husband can't free the Eved by him injuring her because she has the Kinyan Aguf. Here, where it's the matter of Tosfos says, it's a svara. After all, the whole idea behind Yoyma Yemayim is that the master has the right to beat the slave, to get him to do his work. So therefore, it's more logical that the one for whom the mayor would say, the one for whom the slave is currently working, is the one who has the din of Yoyma Yemayim. With that said, though, Tosfos also brings a different girsa and understands that, no, actually, according to the mayor, when we said before, at the end of yesterday's Gemara, we said that both Tanoim, or both Braises that we learned yesterday, might hold Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf, might hold that we hold so we said that both of them might hold of Takonas, that neither one would hold of Takonas Usha, and they were arguing on Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf. Tosfos brings that actually, no, there might be, we might have the Girsa, we might say that both of them, that both of them agree with Takonas Usha, and we're saying that one Braisa is like Rameyer and the other one is like Rabbi Eliezer, who we're going to learn soon, and Rameyer himself. So Tosfos has a different Girsa earlier, in short, that it comes out that maybe that according to Rameyer, we would, in fact, Rameyer might say consistently with what he says over here, the same way as he says over here, the one for whom the Eved is working is the one for whom is the one who has the din of Yoyma Yemayim. That one would also be the one who's able to free him with Shein Va'ayin, meaning unlike what we learned yesterday, that neither the husband nor the wife is able to cause the Eved to go free. We might say that we might have the Tosfos brings, we might have a different Girsa in the Gemara, from which it would come out that Rameya would say that the master, that the husband, if he injures him with Shein Va'ayin, can cause the Eved to go free. And then it would be consistent with what we're saying over here. But if not, then again, Tosfos is saying there is a reason to differentiate, because there you can say that each one's kinyan blocks the other one from setting him free, whereas here we're not talking about setting him free. We're talking about being potter from punishment for killing him, and then we can say the one for whom he's currently working has that special patur. Anyway, that's Reb Meir. Continues the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda omer sheni yeshne b'din yoyma yomayim mepnei shehu kasboi. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around, that the second one, the one to whom the Eved was sold, is the one who has the din of Yoma Yemayim, because he's Kasboy, because he's the actual monetary, because he's the actual monetary property of the second one. The first one only has him working for him temporarily. So therefore, Kasava Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dami. So he holds that Kinyan Peres is not the Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, the first one who only has Peres at this point, because the Eved himself, he sold to the other guy, then he doesn't have the tour of then he doesn't have the tour of Yoyma Yemayim, because he doesn't actually own the Eved anymore, only the second one does, and therefore it would be the second one who gets that tour. Then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yosi Yom Shneim Yeshin B'din Yoyma Yemayim, both of them have that exemption of Yom Yomayim, Zem Pneshu Tachta, Zem Pneshu Kaspoi, because the second, the first one has him working for him, the second one has him as Kaspoi. So the Gemara explains, Mesakalei, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf Dami, Kinyan Aguf Dami, Ilab, Kinyan Aguf Dami. Rabbi Yossi says, it does stop it. We can't be sure whether Kinyan Peres is considered like Kinyan Aguf, and therefore the Suffolk Nefoshis Lahokel, so therefore we have a Suffolk and Dinyan Nefoshis, and therefore we have to be Mako. We can't, Basedin will not be able to execute either one of them if he beat the Eved and he died within 24 hours, and he died within 24 hours, or he died after 20, if he dies within 24 hours, they are Chayv Misa no matter what, but rather that they can't execute either one of them if he beat the Eved and he died after 24 hours, because we can't be sure which one is actually considered to be his owner, which one has that patur of Yom HaYomayim, and therefore Rabbi Yossi says, Safik Nefashas Lahom. And the Gemara continues, yet another one, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, or Rabbi Lozer, it says on the side, it should be, Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lozer says, Shneim Einen Bidin Yom HaYomayim, neither one has the exemption of Yom HaYomayim, meaning that either one of them, if he beats the Eved, and the Eved is and the Eved dies even after 24 hours, whichever one beat him is going to be the one who's Chayav Misa, says Rav Eliezer. Zela Fisha Ena Tachta, Zela Fisha Ena Kasboy, because the opposite. He's not Tachta, the one of them he's not Tachta, he's not actually the second one, he's not working for him yet, and the first one, he's not Kasboy anymore, so therefore neither one is his exclusive owner, and therefore you don't have, and the Patur of Yoyma Yomayim would only be for an exclusive owner. Okay, so the Gemara says, so the point being, in other words, that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the first two Tanoim over here, are arguing on the point of Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, and therefore we see that the earlier Brisis that also talked about the fact that the Eved goes free with Shein Ra'ayin can also reflect the one way of understanding it is that those two Brisis can reflect this distinction whether we say Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf, the one that says that not would say therefore the husband has no ownership of the Eved at all. Therefore, if he injures him, there's no Shein V'ayin. Only if the wife does, and the other one would say Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. Either both of them are considered the owners of the Eved, and therefore neither one injuring him causes him to go free. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav, my time is Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer say that? The other opinions we can understand. Either they hold Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf or not, or Rabbi Yossi is saying there's a Suffolk. But why is Rabbi Eliezer saying that neither one has that patur at all, and therefore either one can be killed by Beis Din for killing the Eved? Why? The answer is Amakro ki chaspoi hu, because the pasuk says why is it that the master is potter if the Eved lives for 24 hours? Because the pasuk says ki chaspoi hu, because he is his money, which implies kaspoi am yuchad loy. That implies could have said ki kesef hu. That implies that it has to be that he's his exclusive money, his exclusive property, and therefore here it's not because. And here it's not because the fact is that either one of them has that both of them have a claim on the Eved. So the Gemara in Baba Basra discusses this also, and it discusses how Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda also understand it, and they also have drushas from Pesukim. Although Tosfos explains over there, and Tertas Chaim explains over here that they're not really arguing on the drushas of the Pesukim. After all, each one has to realize there is a word in the pasuk that implies the other one's opinion. Fundamentally, as the Gemara is saying over here, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing about this matter of Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf or not. So Tosfos goes and compares this with the previous part about Shein V'ayin, about why. So again, why is it before we were saying that apparently Rabbi Meir would agree that by Shein V'ayin, you wouldn't say that the husband injuring the Eved causes him to go free, where here the mayor is saying that the one who he's actually working for has the din of Yom HaYomayim. So again, like we talked about, Tosfos discusses either that there's a different girsa or that a mayor would draw a distinction between them because of the logic of who Yom HaYomayim is supposed to apply to. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Kiman Ozla Hoda Omer Amemer. Now, according to which of these opinions does it go? This that Amemer says, Ish v'isha shemochru b'nichse malug. Here we've been talking about all this time. We've been talking about the nichse malug, about if the wife sells them, whether the husband can prevent that sale or not and get it back, since he has the payrus. But Amemer is saying, even if the husband and wife sold the nichse malug, and Rashi explains, even if it means that they both jointly agreed to sell it, what they did doesn't count for anything. Kiman could Rabbi Eliezer. Necessarily, that would have to be like Rabbi Eliezer of that would have to be like Rabbi Eliezer of the Braisa that we just said, because Rabbi Eliezer is saying again that you have to have, in order to have the din of Yom or Yomayim, it has to be that he's the exclusive property of one or the other of them. And in the case of the Evet and the 30 days, he's not. Well, by the same token, then. By the same token, then, if by the Nixamalug, where you have the same kind of thing, one of them owns the wife owns the goof, the husband owns the peiros, then we would say the same kind of thing, that neither one is considered the owner of it, and therefore that we would say that even both of them together can't sell. So yeah, Tosfos points out that what Amemer is doing is he's learning the fact that the part he's learning about, he's not learning from the din of Yoyma Yemayim, really, that we just said. He's learning it from the part of Shichrur, about freeing an Eved, that the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, about a case where involving partners who own an Eved, how the Eved goes free, as we talked about before, and as the Gemara is going to bring another Braisa in a minute. Now, Rashi over here is saying, we're talking about even when the husband and wife together went and sold the property, that Amemar is saying it wouldn't work. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that, no, what we mean is, if one of them sold it and then the other one sold it, so then it wouldn't work, because when one of them sold it, it wasn't a valid sale, and then the other one is only doing it in order to not get into a fight with the other one or something. But if they would, the Ravid learns that if they were to both go jointly, then it would be good. The Rambam also paskins, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if both of them sell the Nichsa Malug together, it is a valid sale. And the various Mefoshim and various Nosei Kelim deal with exactly how that is, how the Rambam would understand that in the light of the Gemara over here, where the Lachem Mishnah talks about it, and there's other Mefoshim that talk about that there would be a distinction, even though Amemar is equating it and saying that according to Rabbi Eliezer, where there's no Yoyma Yemayim, where the person is not the exclusive owner of an Eved, then we can't say that he has the dinim of the master of that Eved. And Amemar is saying the same thing as far as the Nichsa Malug, but not necessarily based on other Gemaras and based on other considerations. We might say that that's not universally agreed to, and therefore we could say that even if we learn like Rabbi Eliezer, and the Rambam does paskin like Rabbi Eliezer as far as the Eved, nevertheless we could say that that doesn't necessarily apply if they're both selling the Nichsa Malug, because there is the difference. By the Eved, you do need exclusive ownership. By the Nichsa Malug, it's enough that the two of them together, who between them, they have the complete ownership, are agreeing to sell it. So there are various Mefoshim that talk about that point. Okay. See, so it's not, even though Amemar was saying that you can compare it, but based on other Gemaras and based on other considerations, Acharonim talk about that there may after all be a distinction between them. Okay. What about, the Gemara says, Man Tana Lahad the Tana Rabbanan? What about which Tana is the author of the following Braisa? Misha Chetzi Eved B'Chetzi Ben Chorin, an Eved who's a person who's half free and half. And by the way, also before we get to that, actually, Rashi points out the reason why. Now the question is, what about, let's say you have a regular case where something belongs to two partners, they can agree jointly to sell it. Why over here by the Nichsa Malug are we saying that not? That even though the husband and wife in effect are partners in it, nevertheless they can't sell it. And again, Rashi is learning, even if they both come at the same time and want to sell it, the reason is, Rashi says, because when it comes to a regular partnership, each one owns the whole thing. Eventually, when they split it, each one is going to have only half, but in principle each one owns the whole thing, and when they divide it, each one is going to get half of it. Here you have, she owns the complete goof, he has no part of the goof. She owns, rather, the complete goof, he has no part of it. He owns the complete peiros, she has no part of it. So therefore, it's not miyuchad loy lozeh v'loy lozeh, and therefore it wouldn't work. In which case, Tosfos says, the case that now we're going to talk about, an eved of shnei shutvin, or the Chetzi Eved, the Chetzi Ben Chorden, evidently we would have to be talking about a similar kind of thing, that since the Gemara is comparing them, then we would have to say, when we talk about Eved Shel Shnei Shutfin, again, it would have to be like before, for example, that it means that one of them owns the Peiros and one owns the Guf. And in the case of Chetzi Eved V'Chetzi Ben Chorden, it would have to be, in other words, that all the money has been paid, but the Get Shichru hasn't been given yet. Otherwise, not exactly comparable, because otherwise it would be like a case of if you have two people jointly own an Eved, and either one can use the Guf and either one can use the Peiros, then that wouldn't be the same kind of thing, like Rashi is saying, then there's no reason why they shouldn't both jointly be able to sell him. Anyway, so Brisa says Misha chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin. So a person who's half free and half slave, b'chein eved shel shnei shutfin, in the same way an eved who belongs to two partners, ein yotzin b'rosh hevarim. They do not go free with rosh hevarim. Again, if either one of them knocks out his eye or his tooth or any of the 24 rosh hevarim. These tips of limbs that never regenerate. So he wouldn't go free if either one injures him by that. Which Tana of the four Tanoim that we said before would hold that? So the Mordechai tells Ravashi, they said in the name of Rabba that this Braisa also would be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Just like Rabbi Eliezer said before about the din of Yoyma Yemayim, that the Eved has to belong exclusively to the master in order for the din of Yoyma Yemayim to operate, because the pasuk says Kaspoy, that it's his, that it has to be his money. The same way the Eved has to be completely the same way when the pasuk says v'chiyake ishes ein avdoi or yes ein amosoi, then the same thing, it has to be his exclusive Eved, and in this case it's not exclusively the Eved of either one of them. So this braisa that says that neither one, whether the one has kinyan peiros, one has kinyan aguf, for example, or chetzi eved v'chetzi ben chorin, where the eved is essentially already free, all the money's been paid for him, as Tosfos says, all that's missing is a get shichru, and now the master injures him and causes him to lose the shein or ayin or whatever, he wouldn't go free because now he's not kaspoy ham yuchad loy anymore. That could only be, Rava is saying, that would only be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Because Rabbi Eliezer again is saying that when it comes to Yoyma Yomayim, also you're darshin in the same way. Kaspoy means Ham Yuchad Loy, it has to be his exclusive ownership.
So if he doesn't go free, does he have to pay for his wounds?
So what do you have to pay for his wounds? So we learned before. No, since the Eved Kanani is the property of the master, then no, he doesn't have to pay him anything. And there are various Rishonim that talk about what about according to the opinions, what about according to the three other opinions, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi, what would happen in this case? Tosfos before explains that maybe according to Rav Yehuda, we would say the one who has the Kinyan Aguf would be the one who causes him to go free with the Shein V'ayin. And then, according to the other Girsa and Tosfos, the one who has Kinyan Peiros is the one who causes him to go free, and then Rabbi Yehuda would be the one who says with the one who has the Kinyan Aguf. And the Ravid brings that actually either one would free his part, meaning if you have one of them owns the Guf and the other one owns the Peiros, according to so the Ravid learns that according to the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, you would say the one who owns the Peiros, if he injures the Eved, causes that now the Peiros can't be used by anybody else anymore. The Eved now owns those. So in other words, he owns his own work from now on. So he could still be sold to somebody else, but the work would still belong to him. And then vice versa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the one who owns the Kinyan Aguf would be the one who causes the Guf to go free. So different ways of explaining how the other Tanoim would hold, but in any case, the point is that Rava is saying Rabbi Eliezer would be the Rabbi Lazar, as we said before, would be the one who says that that no, he doesn't go free at all with Shein V'ayin because he has to be cast by Amiyuchim.
When
the Guf goes free, no, because it means, in other words, that the other guy still owns his work. Like now he has to pay him for his work. Maybe he has to work for him free. I don't know exactly. Okay. Now, getting back now to matters of chavolos, of injuries and the payments for them. Now, we learned earlier in the perek that you have five things, nezek, tzar, ripui, sheves, and boshes. So the Mishnah says, hatekeya l'chaveroi, if a person is tekeya, somebody else, nois and lois sela, then he pays him a sela. Rashi gives two possibilities of tekeya. One is that he hits him in the ear, in English it's called, he boxes his ear. And the other explanation Rashi says is that he actually blew or yelled into the guy's ear. The Rambam gives another understanding that it has nothing. The Rambam gives another understanding that has nothing to do with the ear. Means that he punched him in the back of the neck. So then Nosim Loisela, he gives him a sela. So Rashi explains because of the boshes, where the implication is, in other words, if in addition there was, and Rashi actually learns earlier in the Masechta, where we also had this Mishnah was brought. Rashi learns over there that's the sela is only for the boshes. If in fact there were other things as well, if it was a hard enough blow that it actually caused nezek or tsar or what have you, then in addition he would have to pay for those. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that not. The Rambam learns these kinds of things that we're going to mention in the Mishnah over here. The payment that the Mishnah is mentioning is meant to cover everything. The Chachamim figured out that a case of tekeya l'chaveroi, the typical nezek and tsar and so on and so forth, is going to equal a sela, and therefore that's the amount he has to pay. No, we're talking about to a regular yid. No, here we're not talking about an eved anymore. New Mishnah. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosei Aglili mona. Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Yosei Aglili, says he doesn't give him a sela; he gives him a mona, which is 100 zuz equal to 25 sloim. So not one sela, but 25. Continues the Mishnah. Sotroi, if he slapped him, like in the face, noisamai masayim zuz, then he has to pay 200 zuz for the boshes. Yeah. And if he slaps him with the back of his hand, which is an even bigger boshes, noisamai arameyas zuz, then he pays him 400 zuz. Other examples. Soram ba'oznoi, if he soram the other guy's ear, and here also Rashi says, two possibilities. One is that saram means he pulled the guy's ear, and the Rambam says similarly, means that he twisted his ear. A second explanation, Rashi says, is that he nicked the guy's ear. Anyway, that's a very big humiliation. Or tolosh besaira, he pulled on his hair. Or rokak v'igia b'rukoi, or he spit at the guy and the spit landed on the other guy. Or hever talis emimenu, or he took off the other guy's talis from him. So now, in other words, so the talis is an overgarment. He's still wearing it. So it's not really an overgarment, I should say. It's like the equivalent of a shirt and pants nowadays. So in other words, he's leaving him in the street wearing in underwear. The Meiri says all the more so if he actually took off. If it would be more like, in other words, without the talisa. In other words, the guy is standing over there in his ksoness or whatever the equivalent is. His body is covered, but he's still wearing only one garment. The Meiri points out all the more so if he actually took off his clothing and exposed his skin. Anyway, so then. And another one, Pora Roisha Isha Bashuk. Another one, if it was a married woman and he uncovered her head in the street. So then, Noisim like Arameus Zuz, in all those cases, he has to pay 400 Zuz. Zach, well, now the general rule is Hakolafi Kvodai, everything goes according to the covered of the person to whom the boshes was caused. Now, the Gemara is going to discuss. We'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, what does that mean? Does it mean that the amounts we said in the Mishnah are for the simple person, but then if it's a more becovedic person, then you have to pay more? Or does it mean the other way around? The amounts in the Mishnah are for the most becovedic person, and for a lesser person, you might pay less. So we'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem. Anyway. But Rabbi Akiva says you don't go according to the person's covered. We learned this earlier in the parak. Afilu aniim should be Yisrael. Even the poorest Jews, royanoisim kilem bnei chorin, should yodim nechseihem. We always evaluate in terms of the boshes, and in terms of the boshes, we always consider them to be the equivalent of rich people who became poor. And they still feel themselves to be rich and dignified. Shehem b'nei Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, because after all Jews are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and therefore we have to evaluate them all the same way. Now we learned, when we learned this expression a few days ago, first of all, we had an explanation that said on the Gemara, we had an explanation that means the Raivan had said that it meant that actually, according to that opinion, we also have to be makel on the Mevayish, because the Mevayish himself is also a Ben Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So therefore we don't want to go too hard on him. So we had over there Reb Shimon saying that when it comes to rich people, we consider them only as though kilem b'nei chon sheyodu b'nei chseyim, and poor people we consider kipchusin shebehem, meaning Reb Shimon had said we want to be makel in all cases on the mazik. Here Reb Akiva is using the expression somewhat differently. We want to be more dignified towards the nizik, towards the nisbayish, even though that means making the other guy pay more. Rashi had also pointed out over there, by the way, that you don't consider a rich person based on his riches, because then Emel Dov is safe. We said a person might say that I'm rich, I'm not willing to accept such humiliation for less than a million zuz, and we can't say that. On the other hand, the Meiri says over here that even according to Rav Akiva, an actual rich person, you would have to evaluate more. Maybe not to the extent of a million, but based in would have to evaluate more. Anyway. So, continues the Mishnah. It happened once that a certain man did that. He uncovered a married woman's head in the street. So then, and the man, the Mishnah said he has to pay 400 zuz. So, bos lifnei Rav Akiva. So she came to Rav Akiva for a din Torah, and sure enough, v'chiva litim lo abame zuz. And Rav Akiva said that the guy has to pay 400 zuz. So the man says, Rebbe tenli's man. So he says, Rebbe, give me some time to come up with the money. And that's reasonable. Beis Din will do that. And in most cases, they will give a person a certain amount of time to come up with the necessary money. But this guy was doing that in order to play a trick. He had no intention of paying the money, and he decided to do things in a way where he's going to play a trick and demonstrate that he shouldn't have to pay. So he waited. So the word shomar can also mean to wait, like the of shomar sadavar. So he waited until he saw that until one time when she was standing by the entrance of her chatzer, the shomar asakad before neha. Then he broke a jug of oil in front of her. Oboik iser shemen, and there was only an iser's worth. There was only about an iser's worth of oil in that jug, which is a very small amount of money. Gil says Roisha, she uncovered her head, she was taking the oil. Metapachas is like when you put your hand into a spilled liquid and you get some of it on your hand, and then she's taking that and putting it on her head. But she figures, why should the oil go to waste? The container is broken. Let me take some of that oil and put it on my head. People would use oil as sort of shampoo and other purposes like that to keep their skin soft. The Meiri brings another possibility that the metapachas, sometimes we find in the Gemara, metapachas also means when a person claps their hands in grief. So he explains that one possibility is that the container actually belonged to her. And therefore, in other words, when she saw that it's broken, she was like clapping her hands in sadness and grief over, look at that, my container and my oil is going to go to waste. But he says the fact that it says manachas yoda arosha fits better with the first explanation, that it means that she's actually trying to use the oil rather than going to waste. Hamidalar edim. So he made sure that there were edim there to watch what was going on. And the guy comes to Rav Akiva. Omalei, he says, Lazu, Ani noisin Dalad Mea Zuz. You're expecting me to pay this woman 400 Zuz? She herself had no problem uncovering her hair in public, and even just for a tiny amount, for an Isser of oil. Besides which, also, the fact that it was only an Isser of oil means also that she was poor. So therefore, so he's saying, between all of that, why should I have to pay this enormous amount of 400 Zuz? So that was why. That was to begin with. He had asked for the time, the pashtus, in order to be able to set up this whole situation. Anyway, Omalei, Rav Akiva answers the guy, Loya Marta Klum. What you said doesn't count for anything. It still doesn't help you. You're still going to have to pay the 400 zuz. It is true, for example, Achoyvo Ba'atzmai. It's true, for example, that when a person injures himself, Afa Pisha Eni Rashoi, even though he's not allowed to, as we'll learn in the Gemara eventually why that is, Potter, nevertheless, a person injures himself. The fact is, he is Potter. He's potter from paying, because who is he supposed to pay? Nevertheless, and yet if another person injures him or causes him, in this case a boshes, then they're going to be chayim. So the same way, she wants to be mevayish herself, fine, that's her problem, but you are not allowed to be mevayish her, and you are responsible for paying that amount for the humiliation to her.
That's its point.
It's different whether a person does it himself or whether somebody else does it. Yeah. Similarly, Rabbi Akiva continues. Similarly, for example, a person chops down his trees. Even though, again, he's not allowed to, and he is in fact over on Baltashkis. Tosfos in fact points out later on when we say that where the Mishnah says potter. Now we don't actually mean completely potter. He is actually going to be potter from paying. He may still get malchus. He may still get malchus because he's over on Baltashkis. So what we mean is potter in the sense that he doesn't have to pay for it. But nevertheless, but if somebody else chops down his trees, then they'd be chayev. So the same way, Rabbi Akiva is telling this guy, just because she did that doesn't mean that you have the ability to do that, and you should be potter. No, you're still chayev the 400 zuz.
And he lost the jug.
And he lost the jug as well. Yeah. And according to the maybe second explanation, that it was her jug, means he has to pay for that as well. Yeah. Okay. So the first thing that you want to ask the Boilu, Monet Sodi Tnan or Monet Medina Tnan? When we talk about this, when we talk about a pointed up Yosef Aglili, a Monet, when we talk about the Sela, the Gemara established earlier in the Masechta that the Sela, that the Tanakhama says, is definitely talking about a Sela Medina. We learned before, we had a case, Rashi refers to a case that we had earlier in the Masechta involving a guy called Chonon Bisha, bad Chonon, who went and then was tekea somebody, as we said, you know, he boxed him in the ear or yelled in his ear or punched him in the neck or whatever, and they made him pay a Sela Medina, and we have the story over there in the Gemara. He only had like a very worn, now a Sela Medina is 1/8 of a regular Sela. You have a Sela Tzodi, is pure silver, and it's worth 4 zuzim. A Sela Medina is 1/8 silver and the rest copper, and therefore it's worth only 1/8 of a Sela Tzodi. So earlier the Gemara had explained that you had this case again involving Chonon Bisha. So he had, the Gemara mentions over there, he had only a worn out zuz, but he only has to pay a half a zuz. So what he did is he gave the guy another tekeah ba'oznoi and then gave him the entire zuz. As a half for one and half for the other. The point being, in other words, we see that it's not Sela Medina, otherwise he would have had to pay 8 zuzim, but rather it's not Sela Tzodi, otherwise he would have been paying 8 zuzim for the two times. Rather, it's Sela Medina, and therefore he pays only 1 zuz. So that for sure, when the Tanakhama says, well, no Sela, there's no question that it means Sela Medina. But when Rabbi Huda says in the name of Rabbi Yisag, really Mona, the question is, Mona Tzodi Tznan or Mona Medina Tznan? Are we talking about a Mona Tzodi? Or are we talking about a Mona Medina, which would be worth 1/8 of that? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can bring a proof. Gahu gavra tokalei lachavre. There was a guy who did this tekeya lachaveroi. Also a kamei de Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and the case came to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. Omerle, and Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. We call him Nesia to distinguish him from his grandfather. He was one of the early Amiroim, unlike Rebbe, was one of the last Tanoim. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Nesia says, Omale, ha ano ha Rabbi Yosef Aglili, here's me, and we'll see in the Gemara soon what he means by this, here's me, and here's Rabbi Yosef Aglili, havle monetzori, go give him a monetzori, shmamina monetzori tnan, shmamina. So that, wouldn't that prove that we give a monetzori, and in fact, yes, we can prove that that's how it is. Tosfos earlier, in that sugya earlier on, Daf Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, points out, it seems very odd then. It comes out that the gap between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef Aglili is enormous, because according to the Tanakhama, he's paying him only a Sela Medina, which is worth one Sodi Zuz. Here we're saying that he has to pay him a Sela, a Mona Tzodi. So it means, in other words, and a Sela Medina, Tosfos calculates, is only 1/200th of a Monetzori. So is there that big a, why should there be that big a gap between them where the Tanakhama is saying that you're paying 1/200th of what Rabbi Yosef Agrivius is saying you'd pay? So Tosfos says that maybe in fact they're talking about a poor or a rich person respectively. So we could say by a poor person, it's only by a poor person, then the Tanakhama, so they're not really arguing. Tosfos says maybe one is talking about a poor person, you'd pay him only a selah medina, and the other one is talking about a rich person, and you'd pay him according to Rabbi Yosef, really mona tzori. Then Tosfos says, actually, maybe they are in fact arguing, but still we can say the original context that they were talking about respectively was a poor and a rich person. So now we could say one of them was primarily talking about a poor person, and he says we apply that across the board. The other one's primarily talking about a rich person, but he says we apply it across the board. So there would be a machlokas, but originally they would have been evaluating it based on poor and rich respectively, because a rich person has greater boshas than a poor person. Okay. Anyway. So my ha'ana ha'Rabbi Yosef Agrivi. What does Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya mean with this expression? He was me and he was Rabbi Yosef Agrivi. Ilei mehachika amalei. Does he mean to tell this guy on ha'ana d'chazisicha? He was me where I actually saw you be tekeil achaveroi. And the heart of Yosef Agrivi d'alam monetzori. And we put that together with Rabbi Yosef Agrivi's opinion that says, that says that you have to pay a monetzori, and therefore we would say zil havle monetzori, and the result is by combining those two things together, you have to pay a monetzori. So in other words, so are we assuming that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya actually saw the guy do that, and therefore he's judging the case based on that? The problem with that is lememra de aid nasa dayan. Does that mean that an aid who saw something happen can become a dayan on the very same thing? V'hotanya, we learn in a brisa, that's not that, we learn in a brisa, that's not so simple. Sanhedrin shiro echad shahoragas nefesh. If the Sanhedrin themselves saw one person killing another, miktsosan nasu edim and miktsosan nasu dayanim, then what happens is some of them can serve as edim and some of them can serve as dayanim, divrei Reb Tirfin, and that's what Reb Tirfin says. So now Reb Tirfin agrees with the concept that the Gemara says ein ed nasa dayan. However, he understands it, he applies it a little differently. Not that a person who saw something can't be a dayan on it, but that you can't have, for example, that two of them are going to be standing in front of the Beis Din and give edus, and then they're going to take their seat on the bench with the other dayanim and then actually judge the case. Reb Tirfin says they can't do that. So let's say you have, you'd have to have, let's say, at least 25 of them, let's say. So you have two of them, then will serve as edim, and 23 will serve as the Beis Din. Rashi actually, interestingly, mentions the point over here that Rashi mentions a little bit further on that you're talking about that there, say, for example, there were only three of them. So that would imply as though you could do dinin nefashos with only three. You can't. You need 23. However, there are Rishonim who understand. The Ran understands Rashi to be meaning that actually, technically, of course, you need 23 in order to convict the guy and execute him. But what you could have is the edus can be given in front of three, and then they can go and report to the Beis Din of 23. So you don't need, in other words, according to Rashi's way of looking at it, according to that understanding of Rashi, it would come out. You don't actually need the full 23 to hear the Edim. It's enough that a Beis Din of 3 hears the Edim, and then they go and report their findings to the Beis Din of 23. Anyway, the point is that Reb Tirfin says that in this case, if you have, let's say, at least 5 of them or at least 25 of them or whatever, then 2 of them can be Edim and the rest of them can serve as Dayanim. The fact that they saw it happen doesn't disqualify them as Dayanim. But that's the point of Divrei Reb Tirfin. Reb Akiva and Mekulam Edim Haim, they ain't Ed Nasa Dayan. And Reb Akiva says all of them become Edim. Therefore, an Ed can't become a Dayan and all of them apostle Edus. All of them apostle to judge this case. So ad kan lekamer Reb Tirfin elod miktsasu nasu edim miktsasu nasu dayanim. Even Reb Tirfin is only saying that some of them can serve as edim, and some of them can serve as dayanim. Avol ed nasu dayan lekamer. Even Reb Tirfin is not saying that a person can actually serve as an aid and then turn around and serve as a dayan. So how could we say that Reb Yehuda Nasiya saw this guy box the other guy's ear or whatever hatakeya ba'oznei means exactly, and then we're going to say that he then sits as the dayan and judges the case? Even Reb Tirfin doesn't allow such a thing. Now Tosfos over here brings, and then the Gemara brings in various places, different reasons why that is. Why indeed, if he saw it himself, why indeed, if he served as an aide, can he not serve as a dayan? So one point is because the pasuk says v'omdu shnei ha'anoshim lifnei Hashem, the edim have to stand in front of the beis din. That implies that the edim and the beis din are two different groups. So you can't have a person serve as an aid and then also serve as a dayan. That's one thing Tosfos points out. Another and then Tosfos discusses other points from which we learn. You have, for example, something as far as a din in the dinim of Yerusha that we can't say that when they hear a person is saying at night that I want to give out my Yerusha in such and such a way to my children, then we say that they can't afterwards go and sit at the beis din on it by day, because in other words, it comes out they were only edim and now they can't become dayanim, because by seeing it by night, they can't judge the din Torah at night. You don't judge the din Torah at night. So therefore we see from that that Tosfos says also because it's going to be an edus shiat the yochel hazima, because how can you be mazim if they themselves are the dayanim and they themselves are the edim? Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, because so what, you can be mazim them in a different based in that's as far as Reb Tarfon, who says that it can't be that if they served as an aid, they serve as a dayan. As far as Reb Akiva, who says that that even if they just saw it, they can't serve as dayanim, the Gemara elsewhere explains the reason, because Reb Akiva takes the view that dayanim have to look for some kind of schus about the guy. They have to look for ways to exonerate him. If they themselves saw it, they're not going to be able to do that. This is brought in many places in Hasidus to show the idea how much more powerful seeing is than hearing. You hear something, even from the most reliable person, it's not so embedded by you as something that you actually saw. So therefore, when the dayanim hear from the edim, even if they know these edim are 100% trustworthy, nevertheless, they can still say to themselves, you know what, still there might be a reason to exonerate the guy. But if they see it for themselves, there's no possible way they're going to, and therefore Reb Akiva disqualifies them as dayanim altogether. Anyway, the point is, even Reb Tarfon doesn't allow a person to serve as an aid and then turn around and serve as a dayan. So how over here is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saying, here's me, meaning I personally saw you do this, and now I'm going to judge the case. So the answer is Kitanya Hikinshiro Balila. The case is when Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva are arguing is where they saw the event happen by night. And now, therefore, Deloila Meba Dinaninhu. Now, nighttime is not a time when they can judge dinin, when they can judge any kind of case in based in neither dinin mumnus nor dinin afashis. So the next day, when they're judging, then you have to have some of them giving aiders, because after all, you're having to base yourself on edus. You're ultimately having to base yourself on something that you hear, because you can't say, I saw it, and therefore I can judge it, because when you saw it was not a time for judging. That is why Reb Tarfon says you can't have people serving as edim and then as dayon. But rather, we can say that if they saw it by day, then Reb Tarfon would allow some of them to stand up as edim and give the edus, and then sit down as dayanim and judge the case. Well, therefore, it would come out that Reb Yehuda Nasiya would be agreeing with Reb Tarfon and saying that in this case, the guy did it by day. So therefore, so we could work it out that way, and we could say Reb Yehuda Nasiya would allow that, and he could judge the case himself. So it comes out, so Rashi says that he'd have to be holding specifically like Reb Tarfon. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, Reb Akiva says his whole concept only by dinin afreshes, because again, it has to be that they have to be melamed schus on him by dinin mominus. You don't need that, and therefore, by dinin mominus, even Reb Akiva would agree that if they saw it by day, they could stand as edim and then sit down and be dayan. So therefore, what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying now could work even according to Reb Akiva. Okay, that's one possibility. Now, another way we can understand what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying, he doesn't mean I saw it. He means, here's me, meaning I hold like Rabbi Yehuda Aglili of the Mishnah, who says that you have to pay a monetzori, and here are Adim, not me, but other people who actually saw you do this. Therefore, Zil have a monetzori, and therefore give him a monetzori. So you could say, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is not at all saying, I saw it and therefore I'm going to judge you, but rather that he's saying that the fact is, I hold like Rabbi Yehuda Aglili, and we have Edim that say that you did this, therefore you're going to have to pay a monetzori. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'sover Rabbi Akiva de'ein eid nasa dayan. Now let's get back to this matter of ein eid nasa dayan. Does Rabbi Akiva in fact hold that ein eid nasa dayan, that a person who saw something cannot serve as a dayan on it when it comes to dinin nefashos? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, the pasuk describes v'hika ishas re'eu be'evan oy be'egrov. The pasuk describes two people are fighting and one of them hits the other with a one of them hits the other with a stone or a fist. So why does the pasuk have to mention a fist? So Shimon HaTimni Omer, Shimon HaTimni says, the fact that the pasuk says egroi for fist means that we learn from that a binyan ab. Ma egrif miyuchad, what's special about a fist? Shemosu la'eda ula'edim. It's available at all times for the Edom, meaning Beis Din, and for the Edom to evaluate it. Meaning, in other words, when we bring the guy to Beis Din, why'd you hit this guy? His fist comes along with him. Therefore, Beis Din, now we always have to check. The Gemara talks about it in Sanhedrin. You always, and Rashi mentions it briefly over here. You always have to check whenever one person hits somebody else and there was an injury, you always have to check whether the thing that he used is strong enough and was done in a part of the body that would actually be expected to cause this injury. If you have, for example, the guy goes and taps the other guy with his finger and the other guy falls down dead, we're not gonna be mechayev him anything. Because obviously the other guy is like some kind of weak, delicate person or whatever. So we have to evaluate the fist. How big and how powerful is this fist and how much of an injury can it cause? And we figure accordingly. So now Shimon HaTimni says the fist is something that's always available because when you bring the guy to Beis Din, his fist comes along with him. And it's available for the Edom, meaning Beis Din, and for the Edim. So it's available for the Edim when they first saw it happen. And it's available for the Eda to look at. Af kol shemosu la'edu la'edim. Therefore, Shimon HaTimni says, we learn from that, any kind of weapon that was used to hit somebody, to injure somebody, or to kill somebody for that matter, you always have to have that, because the Pasuk also talks about it. He injures him, and the Pasuk says that only if the guy recovers, then the one who hit him is potter from Misa, implying that if not, then he's chayiv Misa. So we're talking about a matter of dinin nefashos over here. So the egrof has to be available. And the same way Shimon HaTimni says, anytime there was a weapon used to kill somebody, always it has to be available for Beis Din to look at, as opposed to if the Edom lost the weapon, then Shimon HaTimni says you can't judge the case. But the Braisa continues, so Rabbi Akiva says, what do you mean? Did he hit him in front of Beis Din? That Beis Din would know how strong the blow was. In other words, fine, they can have the fist available, but they still don't know. You can have the same fist can be used in a stronger or weaker way. They didn't watch that happen. And what part of his body did he hit him on? Did he hit him on his leg, where that's much less likely to cause to kill a person, or on sipar nafshe, which is much more likely to? Rashi explains that sipar nafshe is the cartilage of the heart. You have your rib cage underneath it by the pit of your stomach. You have a piece of cartilage that sticks down over there, and if a person is punched over there, then that hurts and that could even kill a person. The Oroch explains slightly differently. He says it means between the neck and the heart, so it'd be like the little hole over there, right? Whatever. Anyway, the point is, so Beis Din didn't see that after all. So anyway, they're going to have to depend on the Edim to report that detail to them. But furthermore, Rabbi Akiva says, imagine that he killed him by pushing him off, a roof or off a tower or mess, and then the guy dies. Based in Hochanetz of Bira, what's going to happen? Does Beis Din have to go out to the tower to look at it, to look how tall it is, and whether under normal circumstances it would kill? Or does the tower come to the Beis Din? Neither one, obviously. We don't make Beis Din go to the tower. The tower itself comes to Beis Din in the sense that the Edim come and testify this tower is X number of feet tall, and Beis Din figures on that basis whether it's likely to kill. Furthermore, Rabbi Akiva continues, and what happens? He pushed him off a tower, and then when the Edom came to Beis Din, the tower collapses. Are we going to make them rebuild the tower so Beis Din can look at the tower in person? Obviously not. Ella. So Rabbi Akiva says, no, you can't learn from Egroif what you, Shimon HaTimni, are learning, that we should say that Beis Din has to have the murder weapon available in order to look at. To know it can't possibly mean that because of all these considerations. Ella, Rather, Rav Akiva says, I agree that we learn something from Egrif, but rather what we learn is Ma Egrif Miyuchod Shu Mosol La'edim. All that is with an Egrif, it's available to the Edim. The Edim themselves can see him hitting the other guy with a fist. So therefore, Afkol Shu Mosol La'edim, all you need is that it's available for the Edim to see. As opposed to, for example, he hit him with not it's available for the Edim right on the spot, but it's available for the Edim afterwards to look at and to say, you know what, yeah, this fist or the stone or whatever that he hit him with is taka something that a reasonable person would think is capable of killing. So Rabbi Akiva says, as opposed to if the murder weapon was lost right after we hit him, and the Edim can't even see it, Potter, then indeed he'd be Potter.
It's only from something that killed him.
Because at least it has to be available at the time for the Edim to look at afterwards and see whether this was Taka capable of killing. And then, if possible, they bring it to Beis Din, but if not, as Rabbi Akiva says, they don't have to bring it to Beis Din necessarily, they just have to report on it to Beis Din. The guy's killed, but we don't know. Again, we don't know. It could after all be that he hit him with like a pebble or something and the guy unexpectedly fell down dead, and we can't make the guy chayav misa for throwing a pebble at the guy, because under normal circumstances, that's not going to kill. Yeah. Anyway, katoni mias, the bottom line is, the Braise is saying, omole Rav Akiva v'chi b'fnei Beis Din hiko sheyodin kamei ko. Rav Akiva is using the expression, did he hit him in front of Beis Din, that Beis Din would know with what he hit him, seems to imply hohiko b'fnei eid nasadayin. It sounds like Rav Akiva would say that if he did do it in the presence of Beis Din, then they could actually serve as the dayonim. Didn't we say before that Rav Akiva says that you can't, because ain't eid nasadayin, even if they only observed it? And the answer is, the answer is that svara that Rabbi Akiva is saying is even according to you, Shimon HaTimni, that you want to learn that the murder weapon has to be brought to Beis Din, but you have all these considerations why. Anyway, Beis Din doesn't know how hard he threw it, and so on and so forth. So he's saying, even according to your own svara, Shimon HaTimni, it doesn't really work out. Myself, I would say Bechlal, that if it was in front of Beis Din, then Bechlal, a different Beis Din would have to convict him, because the dayonim of this Beis Din are Edim and Eid Nasadayim and Eid Nasadayim. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is not contradicting himself. He's just saying, he's arguing against Shimon HaTimni. He's saying, even according to your Svara, it's hard to learn from the case of Egrif to say that we actually have to bring it to Beis Din, because then how are you going to explain all these other circumstances where we clearly don't have to? Okay. The Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. Sure. So now we're gonna have a new discussion that's gonna relate back to this machlokas of Shimon HaTimni and Rabbi Akiva about whether we need to bring the actual weapon to Beis Din. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. Sure tam shehemis. If a sure tam killed a person, and we know that sure now is chayav misa, the hizik, and it also injured a person. So it killed one person, and then it also caused nezek. Donin oisid dinin nefashis vein donin oisid dinin mamnis. So you judge the animal with dinin nefashis, and you based and decides that it's chayav skila. You don't judge dinin mamnis. On the other hand, muad shehimis vehizik. On the other hand, if it was a muad that killed a person and then also caused damage, donin oise dinin mominus, v'choizun v'donin oise dinin nefashis. Then first we judge the dinin mominus and we make the owner pay, and then we judge dinin nefashis and we give the ox skila, as we'll explain in the Gemara why that is. And the Braisa continues, kodmu v'donuhu dinin nefashis, if they did it the wrong way around and they first judged the dinin nefashis, then we do not rejudge it as dinim mominus. So the Gemara says, why not? So what if they did dinim nefashis first? Before we give the ox skila, why don't we go and also do the dinim mominus? And after all, with a tam, it's easier to understand, because with a tam, fine. You're paying only migufoy of the animal, and once the animal is chayav skila, then it has no more value anymore. But in a muad, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you're paying min ha'aliyah anyway. The owner is paying out of pocket. So what's the difference whether we judge the animal with dinin nefashis first? Why is the Braisa saying if you judge dinin nefashis, then you can't do dinin mominus anymore? Omar Rava. So Rava says, Ashkachtinu v'rabbanan debei Rav. I found the Chachamim sitting in the Beis Medrash, diyasvi v'kamri, and they were sitting and explaining, Homani Reb Shimon HaTimni. This braisa would be according to Rav Shimon HaTimni from the previous braisa. Ma egrif miyuchot shemosu la'edu la'edim, that he said just like a fist is available to the Eda, to the Beis Din, to look at afterwards, because it's going to always be brought, because it always comes to Beis Din together with the assailant. And it's available to the Edim. And the same way he says, always the weapon has to be available to Beis Din, meaning, as he said, if the Edim lost the weapon, then he's bonder. Alma be'in umdona de bedina. Therefore, you see that Shimon HaTimni requires that for Nisa as well as for Nezakim, you always have to have, Beis Din has to be able to see the thing in order to be able to evaluate whether this is the kind of thing that would have been likely to cause this injury. Now, in this case, once they already judge the shur that it's chayav skila, loy mashinim loy lo umdonin de beidina, we don't want to keep it around any longer than necessary for Beis Din to evaluate it, whether the damage that it caused is in proportion to the actual size of the animal, loy ma'aninim lo dinet, because we don't want to delay the din. Inu yadin, you're not allowed to delay. Once a verdict has been given, then it has to be carried out as soon as possible. We don't go, you're not allowed to do inu yadin, you're not allowed to delay it unduly. Now, the reason why you're not allowed to do it is basically because the person suffers agmas nefesh. Here it's a shur, we're not talking about that. Nevertheless, the Ravid points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta, k'misas bailin, kach misas asher, the rules that apply if the owner were to have to be executed also apply to the shur. Therefore, just like you can't do inu yadin by a person, you can't do inu yadin by a shur either. So the result is, once they decided the shur is chayav skila, they're not allowed to keep it around for Beis Din to go and evaluate, well, what's the size of the shur and what's the whatever, and see whether it's capable of causing this kind of damage. That would be why the braisa is saying, therefore, these potter from Dinei Mamonos. So only according to Shimon HaTimni, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's not an issue, because all we need is the Edim will report to Beis Din on what the damage was done, and Beis Din will hear the Edim and decide the case based on that. So that was Rava says, I heard the Chachmei HaYeshiva saying that. But I, Rava, said to them, no, I feel the tame of Rabbi Akiva. No, you could say that this braisa goes even according to Rabbi Akiva. Because what we can be talking about is where he ran away. Now, who is it? Who is it that ran away? Rashi explains it means the owner ran away. So you can't judge the case without the owner being there. The Rambam, on the other hand, understands that it means that the ox ran away. And then the Noisa Kalim and the Rambam deal with why the Rambam would learn that way, and so what? Why can't we judge the case? And why can't we judge the Dinei Mamonos unless the ox is there? Anyway, so the Gemara asks, Ibarach. So if we're talking about that he, the owner or the animal, ran away, so then in that case, then if we didn't, so even if we didn't judge the Dinei Nefashos, then how can we say that first we do the Dinei Mamonos? How are we judging the Dinei Mamonos in the first place without the owner being there? Again, if you can't judge unless the owner is there, or unless the shur is there, then you can't judge the Dinei Mamonos in the first place. So what is the braisa saying? That if you judge Dinei Nefashos, then you can't judge the Dinei Mamonos. If the guy ran away, you anyway can't judge the Dinei Mamonos regardless whether you did the Dinei Nefashos first. The answer is the kabel sahad yuvarach. The answer would be, we're talking about where Beis Din listened to the testimony of the Edim, and only then did the owner run away. So now, if Dinei Nefashos was first, then since the guy ran away, then still we can't make him pay Dinei Mamonos. But the Gemara says, safe, mehecha mishtalim. Okay, but if the guy ran away, then how are we going to pay? The fact is, we're saying we judge Dinei Mamonos, which means that the Nizek is going to get his payment, but how are we going to do that? If the guy ran away, and if the Mazik ran away, and the answer is meridia. What we do is from the plowing. In other words, what we do is like this. This shur again, it killed and it also caused nezek. Now, what we're saying is that it's going to be chayav din nefashos, but we also have to pay for the nezek. What we do is we make the owner keep the ox for a while and use it for plowing, and then or rent it out to people for plowing. The money that he gets from renting out the animal for plowing, he'll save up until he has enough to pay the nezek. Once we're done with that, then we'll judge the case of din nefashos and have the shur given skila. So that's not a problem of inu yadin. Inu yadin is only once we have the verdict, then we can't delay before carrying it out. But here, we're not even judging the case until we finish paying off the dinim ominous.
Keeping an employee over here who killed someone.
So you're keeping the shur around, yeah. Tosfos actually wonders, that, yeah, so the Gemara says, Alma Mori, Brei Rav Kahana, So we pay from the ridya, from the plowing, then we're going to judge it for dinin nefashis and give it skill. I'm skipping a couple of lines. Yeah. So the Gemara says, so in that case, the same thing by a tam. So why don't we say the same thing by a tam? The Braisa had said that by a tam, we just judge it dinin nefashis and not dinin mominus. Only by a moor are we judging dinin mominus first. So why? If it's a matter of keeping it around to use for plowing, what's the difference between a tam and a moor?
But the
gufoy would be that you pay out of the plowing of it. That would be paying out migufoy. So you would say, in other words, that this sure tam killed the person. It also caused $100 worth of damage. Fine, we're going to rent it out until we've saved up $100 from its plowing. Pay that to the nizek, and then we'll go judge it janin and nefashis. Why is there a difference? You see from that, therefore, that plowing is not considered something that's from the goof of the animal. It's considered an asset that belongs to the owner. So therefore, the same way as a tam, you pay only the goofy. We had assumed for purposes of the question that the plowing is considered goofy. Now we're saying that not. The value that you can get out of plowing with an animal is actually considered a separate asset of the owner's, like any other asset of his, any other nechasim of his. Therefore, since it's sure tam, you're paying only the goofy, then you can't pay out of the plowing of it, because that wouldn't be migufay. That's the point. In other words, the definition of migufay is to actually sell the animal and use the money from it to use the money of it to pay. You know, having the animal work, Mori Bred of Kana is saying, is not considered migufay. That's considered min ha'aliyah. And a tam doesn't pay min ha'aliyah, so therefore you can't do that. Only by a moord you can do that, because a moord you tack a paying min ha'aliyah. Tosfos wonders, in that case, then fine, why don't we say that in that case, we'll take the shur, we'll give it to the nizik, and that's that. That's definitely migufoy. And the answer is, because then we're not going to wait. Think of it like this, Tosfos says. Imagine if the owner says, I want you to wait with skila, with this animal, until I can do some more plowing with it. Obviously, Basin is going to tell him, nothing doing. Your animal killed. We have to give it skila. By the same token, we can't say that we should give the animal to the nizik and have him work with it until he's paid off the thing, because that would be, in effect, that would be the same kind of thing. We can delay, in other words, in order to evaluate the animal and in order to get, in the case of a moord, where anyway we're not paying the gufoy, then we can do that. But in the case of a tam, where we're paying the gufoy, then no, we don't have that option of delaying in order to giving it to the nizik in order that he can plow or do whatever work with it. No, we have to just take and give it skila, and the nizik's not going to get anything in that case, because the animal is being in skila and you only pay the gufoy. So if it switches owners, then it may not be a moord. But here we're talking, that's not relevant. But here we're talking about a tam. So it remains a tam. The din that it's chayav nisa is still going to remain, even if it's transferred to another owner. The din that an animal is a moor and that it pays nezek shalim, and that the owner has to pay a koifer if it killed a person, that changes if you give it to or sell it to somebody else. But a tam remains a tam.
The way it's stricter, then it's more of a punishment.
No, the point is, in other words, that by a tam we're saying that the owner. No, what we're saying is the owner is not going to have to pay in the case of the nezek that was done by the tam, because instead the animal is just getting executed by a moord, since he's paying min ha'aliyah. Then we're saying what we should do is we should keep the animal around temporarily, get enough work out of it to pay for the nezek, because that'll be min ha'aliyah. That won't be megufa. That'll be min ha'aliyah, and then we can go ahead and give the animal skila. And therefore, the Braisa said that if they did it the other way around, then you can't delay the execution anymore, and therefore you have no choice but to do that and forget about the dinim ominous. But the point is, at first we thought that was only according to Shimon Atimini, that the animal has to be available and based in. Now we're saying it actually works out even according to Rabbi Akiva, provided that we're talking about that borach. Because then because Barach, therefore we're not able to judge dinim ominous anymore. Had it not been Barach, then we still would be able to do that, because we'd be able to have it plow in between. Or we'd have the owner pay out of something else, rather, yeah.
Goes on the trip today, right?